Welcome to the 10-Minute Entrepreneur Podcast, intended to equip and encourage business owners and aspiring entrepreneurs. Taught by active business owner, best-selling author, and teacher, Sean Castrina.
Today is going to be a great podcast because I have a real live, the type of businesses that I get excited about. I have already told you, sexy businesses make you broke. Okay. They just do. I like businesses that don't compete with Amazon, don't compete with AI, don't compete with software. I like businesses that have a human element. It's made me a multimillionaire. They're the businesses that excite me and the business owner I have today on the podcast. We're going to talk about that. I have Johnny Van. He's the founder of Finish Line Towing and Repair and some other things, but we're going to talk about his business because I like where he's going with it. Johnny, it's great to have you on the podcast.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
I like your business because it has the human element. I mean, there is no robot going to go find that car that's on the side of the road and tow it. It ain't happening.
No, not anytime soon, at least.
Yeah. I mean, I've broken down twice in the last 2 years and I'm grateful I can hit my little Mercedes button, but they send a company like yours. It was subbed out. No Mercedes guy came to me on the side of the highway. You know, somebody came out there within 40 minutes, you know, put my spare on, and those tires are way heavy, way outside my skill level, and it was done. But it fits that blueprint. It fits the blueprint. I love the businesses where, again, I own service companies. I think if it can get a dent, you need a human to repair it. If you need an oil change, you need a human to repair it. If you need your gutters cleaned, then I can go, you know, I can list 100 businesses that excite me, and not one of them are sexy, but they'll make you rich.
Yeah, that's where those world's going. And if you look, a lot of people are investing in that stuff, as you know, service industry. I mean, I've had people call my business probably once a month, at least. I got somebody calling me from Los Angeles, New York, Chicago, you know, all over the place. Hey, are you interested in selling your business anytime soon?
Absolutely.
You know, so I can tell there's a change happening.
Well, what they want to do is these venture capital companies is they're taking yours and they're going to bulk it with 20 other ones. And then they have this massive holding group. And what they look at is, well, we're servicing this many customers a year or this much revenue. And all they do is collect these companies. They play monopoly. And service companies, you know, are just so durable. And you know, so that's why you're so correct. That's why they like them. I see all my buddies selling their HVAC companies, you know, like crazy, and their termite companies. I mean, these are not sexy, but they're cashing out for a fortune.
Yeah. And like we do, what's really interesting is the average age of the automobile on the road is the oldest it's ever been, ever. It's about 13 to 14 years old. And it's pretty obvious why. I mean, you know, new car prices are through the roof, if you can even get one. So what's happening? Well, people are making their cars last longer, which means they break down more, which means they got to get towed more, unfortunately. And with inflation and things like that, you know, a lot of people can't afford to fix their car. It's just the painful truth. So our industry is kind of unique because there's not a lot of industries that go up in a recession, and we are one of them.
No, it is recession proof because even during the pandemic, people are driving. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one of those that just survives. It survives 2008. I don't know anybody who parked their cars in 2008. They may have, you know, given up their houses, but they weren't, you know, cars are just such a durable industry. You know, what I love about your story, because every, you know, I get all these, you know, DMs and they're all going to start their business. And they have this such rosy picture. It's not how any of my businesses ever got started. And yours is indicative of what really happened. So I want my audience to hear this. He lived in his buddy's basement for 8 months and he didn't take a paycheck for the first year. Okay, there's my story in that I didn't take a paycheck for the first couple years and sacrificed and did multiple jobs to be able to get my business off the ground so that I didn't, you know, take all the oxygen out of it every week.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny thinking about it now, like, you know, when you look back at stuff like that, it seems like every entrepreneur in the world, they want to have some story and they like to boast about it, which is cool. It's a cool story. So I'm careful with it because I don't want to act like I'm bragging, but you know, yeah, I did live in a guy's basement that I barely knew. I had two trucks. I took out a huge loan that I, you know, if things didn't work out, I was going to be responsible for. And I did everything. I dispatched, I did accounting. I did accounts receivable. I worked from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. And sometimes after that, if I had to, you know, if there was money available to go get, we didn't make money for a while. All the stuff that you hear from a lot of businesses, especially service industry. And you got to do that stuff sometimes. And there's a lot of people that aren't willing to.
I love it because it's exactly how business is. It's exactly. And to this day, I mean, I own great service companies, but I find myself still doing humbling activities at least once a month.
Yeah, I try to do that. I try to do that as well.
Yeah, my guys will say, like, I'll get in and they'll say, well, we really need this. And I'm like, okay, am I too good to run the Lowe's and save them an hour and they don't have to, you know, get off a second story or get off a piece of scaffolding, or one of my secretaries will say whatever. And I'll go, you know what? I can go down to the county building and make that payment. You know, it's something so little, you know, a tax payment or whatever it is, but you have to do it. And I think when you lose that, I'm saying businesses under 500 employees. Okay. When you get over 500 employees, take everything I've said and flush it out the toilet and God bless you. But for the 99.9% of everybody who's left, it's actually 98%. For the rest of us, I mean, that's real life business.
That's right. Yeah. I always think of, I don't know if there's probably a lot of your listeners that have watched Peaky Blinders on Netflix. And there's a certain point where the main character, he's a mob boss, and he goes out to the horse shelter and he starts shoveling shit. And he's shoveling shit, and the guy comes over and says, "What are you doing?" He says, "To remind myself where I came from." And I do that. I do that often.
I love it. It's important. It's funny you have that. I have a thing where when I go to my parking lot, I walk around and pick up the cigarette butts and anything on there. It's an act that I do. And then when I go in the office, I start at the bottom floor and I get a big green trash bag and I stuff all the little personal ones that are under everybody's desk.
Yeah. Yeah.
And my secretary goes, "Oh, Sean, you don't need to do that." I go, "No, I know I don't." I in my mind, I say to myself, "I know I don't need to, but I want to, because I want to show a level of humility that there's nothing here, you know, in a pinch I won't do."
Yeah. And it's hard not to sometimes. I do the same thing with the cigarette butts. I do that. I clean the bathrooms too. I mean, I leave the bathroom every time I use it better than it was.
Funny you do that. I don't go in there much to use the bathroom, but every time, you're right, I find myself taking the brush, you know what I mean? And then I yell to my secretary, "What are there monkeys down here?" You know, and uh-huh. She laughs and all that, but you have that sense of when you own it. And I love the human, like, I know the software, it probably sounds cool, but I just left my company about an hour ago and it takes up an entire corner. And I got a huge, massive American flag. It's on a 25-foot pole. I mean, and my whole building's like this beautiful blue, and you got to just picture the red, white, and all the, you know, stars just laying every, and I pinched myself because it was a condemned DMV building when I bought it in 2004. And I went all in. I mean, every dollar I could possibly put together for a down payment on this thing, you know, because I wanted to, you know, do this massive remodel in front of the city. Everybody driving down the road, they could kind of see the whole process. Now it's 18 years later. Everybody's like, "Oh, you got this beautiful building." I'm like, "Yeah, you don't know what I did. I leveraged everything I own to do that thing."
Yeah, and then your customers are seeing what you can do. I remember you mentioning that in the past. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So just curious, how did this type of business happen?
Yeah. So I did start with, that's one thing that I've been through too at an early age, is like I've been through a couple different buyouts where I'm the person buying people out. But I started it with my brother. The reason I started is because, you know, my dad always had two or three trucks and kind of did it as a part-time hobby while I was growing up in high school. I absolutely hated it. I had wanted nothing to do with it growing up. And then I went to college, got a degree, came back, got a job at an insurance company, kind of like a lot of people do, you know, be a good boy, get a job, get your PTO, whatever. And then one day I had my supervisor tell me to change my, I was wearing jeans and it wasn't jean day. I thought it was, I missed the memo. And he literally made me leave, drive to Walmart, buy pants, and otherwise I couldn't work that day. And I put my 2 weeks in the next day because that's such baloney. And
that's nonsense.
Totally. And I don't even see customers in that job. So I called my brother and said, we gotta get something done. And so, you know, that was the birth of Finish Line. And I moved to Madison, Wisconsin. and, you know, kind of grew from there. Kept just kind of buying trucks, doing some advertising, you know, getting more contracts, hiring more people, found another business, bought that business in Milwaukee. And then slowly, what happened is I bought out a partner and then I bought out my brother. And that was about a year and a half ago that the last buyout is. And now I'm the sole owner, you know, for a while now.
Your story is so similar to mine. I bought my original partner out, you know, and you do it. And the game of entrepreneurship is so much like Monopoly. It really is. You're trying to amass, you know, these properties or this equity position. And every year you're trying to grow that a little bit and grow that a little bit. And you have to do those strategic buys. And you're right, you know, you buy people out and then you, you know, you're sitting there with the whole thing and you're sitting there with the whole thing and you're under 30 years old. So that's a good thing. My buddy, it's funny, Wisconsin, my buddy, who's a youth pastor, just took a job in Wisconsin. All he knows, he told me the city, he was recovering from a kidney transplant. So I let his family live in one of my houses for a year and they just moved out 2 days ago. And you left it like a bunch of monkeys, but we'll deal with that in a few days. Cause I know he listens to the podcast. But it, evidently it's like the closest city where Wisconsin, I didn't know, it was like right across a river from Minneapolis. Is that?
Oh, Eau Claire.
That's it. That's where it is. Yeah. There you go. He's like, no, we're right across a river from Minneapolis.
Yeah. Essentially pretty much right next to Twin Cities. Yeah. Wisconsin's unique. There's not much, you know, we got Madison, Milwaukee. Eau Claire is a pretty small town still.
Yeah.
But it's a unique state.
Yeah, I know, because he said, well, we could actually rent a property in Minneapolis. Like he said, well, we could actually be in Minnesota, like 25 minutes away or something. You know, I just remember him telling me about that. I just think that's really cool. So what is, you know, how do you scale this business? What, you know, if you close your eyes, you 10 years from now, is this the business you want to have? Do you got a vision for something else? Or
yeah. So my dream with this thing is, you know, I want to continue doing what we've always been doing. For 4 years straight, all we did was grow, take on debt, pay off massive amounts of debt, more than probably most people would suggest, you know, to pay off in a short amount of time. But I just want to keep doing that. This year has been, you know, 2022, I should say, has kind of been me getting used to being in charge of everything, not having a partner to, you know, delegate things to, and me learning to not be taking too many little tasks on, because, you know, I hired an admin assistant, you know, that was a huge load off me. But now a year later, I'm finding, okay, I think I need another one almost, because I've added all this stuff. So we're growing at a little bit slower pace, but I think the next step is I want to feel like I've reached my full potential in the two locations I'm at. Then we're going on to another city. Chicago makes a lot of sense because it's close. I have seen some opportunities in Minneapolis and Twin Cities, like you said. That's really the next step, is just taking over another city. I've looked at Green Bay and Appleton. Everybody knows Green Bay because the Packers. I'm not sure that's the next place to go, but, you know, population is really what drives our business.
I was going to say, in your business, I was absolutely thinking it's got to be popular. The amount of cars on the road is going to dictate how many, you know, break down. It's funny that you say that, because, you know, franchising is sexy. Everybody kind of talks about it. My one reason why I don't is I look at the typical just me. It's like, if you don't own so many, I don't see where you really get the payoff, because I've looked at my business, a lot of them, and one I might franchise, but I'm like, okay, wait, I get 7%. Let's say seven. So I got to own 14 of them.
Yeah.
I got to own 14 of them to make the money I would probably make on one. And me running one, I know I'm going to do more than a typical franchisee, because I know I'm pretty driven and I'm going to do it a little bit better. I would hope so. So I've got to own about 20. It's going to take 20 franchises to equal the revenue I'm going to make in one company own one run really well.
Yeah. I mean, I think franchising is cool and it is sexy for certain industries. Like if you own a hamburger stand, well, you're never going to make $1 billion unless you franchise. It's just what you got to do. I mean, Culver's, I think, I don't know if you guys don't have Culver's by it, but that's a really good example of just a business that started small in Wisconsin, and they're just exploding. And it's one of the most profitable franchises now that exists, to be honest. It's similar, you know, to like Chick-fil-A. It's that kind of same model.
Yeah.
I don't think my business is a franchise business because we've got a lot of overhead. There's kind of a little bit of a barrier to entry because we're buying $100,000 trucks, and you don't need one. You need like 40. So unless I'm coming into a business that I can partner with somebody that already has established it, or if I'm starting from the ground up, franchising, yeah, I don't see how it works for me. You really, it would be tough. And there has been a couple tries in the past, and I've seen them fail with towing and specifically, and I have seen them fail in the past. So I think you got to grow kind of naturally, and, you know, if you can get a couple cities and you're doing 20-30% a year, that's pretty sweet, you know, and if you own everything.
I was going to say that the key, and I think we think alike in that. And number one, if our margins are really good and I own the whole pie, mm-hmm. I can just play capture the flag. In other words, I'm just going to find another city and I set a goal and I'm like, okay, about every 3 years, I'm going to have this much capital to go capture somebody's flag and let them do all the work, get it set. And I can buy, you know, maybe some trucks that are a little bit older, whatever, you know, I can just buy it. And it, if it's an expensive, you know, cost to entry to have it at a decent level, I don't, you know, it's like a handyman business. I don't care who's working, you know, out of a one man truck. They don't frighten me. You know, it's the big people. And if you don't have that, like if cost to entry is really high, $100,000 truck, it does insulate you to some degree from, you know, everybody coming after you.
Yeah. And there's always where our industries are similar. Cause there's always, you mentioned the guy in the one truck with, it's probably rusty.
Yeah.
It probably barely has a logo on it. He parks it outside his house. That guy, we have that too. And those guys typically don't have insurance. They typically, exactly. They have no customer relationship. You know, they can't talk to people the way you or I could. So those people aren't going to grow. They're going to continue to do their, in our industry, we call it the $30 tow guy that goes around and does tows for $30 and, you know, doesn't make any money. That guy's not my worry either. And I'm just seeing a huge hole with what we do right now because blue collar, any industry, it's like, man, find someone that wants to do it. It's tough, especially what we do. It's not many people that are interested in cars anymore. You know, it's I'm seeing a huge opportunity in the next 2 years. I'm watching a lot of businesses that have gotten old. Guys are starting to sell or just say, well, my business isn't worth anything because I don't have anything, no systems in place. So pretty much just got to sell my trucks and get out. And I'm seeing that start to happen right now. There's actually a couple in Wisconsin that have reached out to me. So it's interesting.
Now, you mentioned something. I think it is true. Whether you ever franchise or not, and I've said this in my book, always build your business like you were going to franchise it tomorrow. Creating the systems, the paperwork, the image, the branding, you know, have it set like that. Number one, if you ever sell it, you're going to sell it for way more. Okay. If you need to take debt towards the value of your business, you're going to get a lot more. So there's no downside of that. I'm here with Johnny Van. He's the founder of Finish Line Towing and Repair. And what I like about it is it's a real story. We're not talking about software. We're not talking about AI, not a digital company. We don't have our little sales page on Amazon. And that's all great. But I got to tell you, I like businesses that involve human beings. I like the human brain. I like what the human beings can do. I've made millions off of it. So it kind of excites me. Tell me this, what's the one piece of startup advice you wish you would have known when you first got started?
I wish I would have known how important it is to own the whole pie. If I could have started the whole gig on my own and saved myself millions of dollars. But you know how it is when you first start out, you're like, well, let's just get it going. I could make a couple hundred grand and, you know, I'd rather have, I mean, you say this, I'd rather have a half of a lot than, you know, which that is true. But also as you look back, it's like, man, I probably could have started this deal on my own. You know,
it's funny you say that because I own the whole pie now and I gotta be honest, it's good to be the king.
Yeah.
So I've partnered to get to where I'm at. And then I had to buy them all out to get to where I'm at. So you're right. It's funny that you mentioned that because you do. I knowing what I now know, what I would say regarding partnering, and I love partnering. when you do partner with somebody who absolutely brings something to the table that you do not have, you will never have, and you can't get in the next 5 years. Mm-hmm. That's the mistake I made. I partnered with people because I liked them. I partnered with people because I thought it would be fun. Mm-hmm. So my pre-35, all the partnerships I did were probably for the wrong reasons. And so then I had to buy people out that I could have, the whole time I could have had employees do what they were doing. I was the one with the great credit, taking all the risk. Like when it came to the money, my credit score was the only one that moved the needle anyway.
Yeah.
So I felt like I carried all the risk. I had made all the big decisions that needed to be made when they needed to be made. And I was splitting a profit with somebody. And that, you're right, that sucks.
Absolutely. Yeah, I remember your first deal was the detailing, right?
Yeah. You know, and I've done that, and I've done, you know, so many, and now I've got, you know, again, I got a lot of partnerships, but you know, when you say that, I reflect, I'm like, yeah, and I've bought out a lot of partners too.
Mm-hmm. And it's expensive. And those conversations they're always the same, at least in my experience. Yeah. I've been in a couple different rooms, and it's always, it is harder if it's your brother, where it was my brother last time that I bought someone out. It's a little different, but It's a weird conversation.
It's like a divorce. Well, it's pretty similar to looking over at the spouse and going, hey, it's been a hell of a run, but I think it's time to move on.
Well, and it's hard to tell somebody like, look, you're not pulling your weight, pal, you know? And that's the honest God truth. And I would say kind of tagging along, segueing on that. If you can just cut through all the bullshit, candy coating, just get down to the brass tacks immediately. Don't try to be friendly, but like, just get to it.
Yeah.
You know, cause we did that for probably 3 or 4 months. We were like, oh, this and texting and just cut through all that shit. Save yourself some money. Tell them what you're thinking right away. You know, I've learned that.
I love it. Hey, listen, do you not love this interview? This is what happens when you talk to real people who start a real business. Okay. And have to interact with people. You break up partnerships. They are awkward as all get out, but you're right. I always say never drag something out that you know you want to do. Like if you know in your heart, this isn't working, you do, you have the difficult conversation. It is what it is. And buying out partners, not fun, but it is to own it's kind of nice to own the whole thing. If in fact, and it sounds like you were doing with what I was doing, I felt like I was doing all the work anyway. I mean, all the work that required brain power and risk. Staring at my partner sitting at his desk, I remember his feet being propped up. And I'm like, he doesn't get this.
Yeah. Yeah. People have different priorities. Some people you can't partner with somebody that doesn't have the same priorities as you. You know, if your partner's whole goal in life is just to make enough money to go party on the boat every Friday and drink for 3 days straight, it's probably not going to work, man. You know, because I don't know about you guys, but I work at 4 a.m. on a Saturday if I have to.
Oh, no, I agree. And I had the same thing. And the problem is he was making more money with me than he had ever made in his life. Mm. So there was zero ambition. And I needed him to take over an entire division and run it so that we could scale. And he could never do it. Like I can never just close my eyes and say, no, can you just take this? No, I always had to come back and get involved.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why the heck are we partners? Like
if you're going to do that, it should be an employee that you can, you know,
and that's
train
what I did.
Or replace. Yeah. That's all too familiar. It's funny. You know, we're thousands of miles apart. And we got the same idea with that. I've been through all that stuff.
You know, it's funny. I know my audience, because they're entrepreneurs, are listening to this and they're going, I'm going through the same thing. Hey, that's why we try to give you so much in such a short amount of time, because your host has very little attention span. Pretty much I have the attention span of an 8-year-old, and I think I'm giving myself credit. We got Johnny Van on here. What we were talking about is, hey, we're talking about partnerships, how difficult they can be. And sometimes it's just good to buy them out. Sometimes it may not be good to start from the beginning. Listen, you need businesses with a human element sometimes. Everybody's looking for these sexy software companies. I've never met anything as brilliant as a human being. I could go into a 30-minute discussion of just what the optic nerve does to make an eye work, because I have a completely blind brother. And when I hear a doctor explain it, there is nothing on planet Earth that comes close to anything that a human being has.
There's no
invention possible. If you just knew what it took to make an eyeball work, It would make you would be dumbfounded. So we kind of get excited about all this technology. And I'm still saying, every time I see a human being, I'm going, that's still the best resource.
It is. Yeah. I think I heard this probably, I think I'm quoting, I might mess it up, but I think it's from a Joe Rogan podcast, but he had a fellow on there that said, the smartest AI in the world is still only about 1% of what an ant's brain can do.
Isn't that incredible?
Think about that. That's crazy.
That's an ant.
You know, that's an ant, you know?
Yeah, I do. I'm going to give a little bit of credit to an amazing creator. We can debate that at a later date. My audience, but I'm gonna go that way. I have a hard time believing you can blow up a junkyard and produce a Rolex. I love the idea that the big bang, boom, and the most amazing thing that could ever be created just happened to pop out of it. I that's a discussion for another day, but you kind of know where your host feels on that. Johnny, I want to thank you so much for being on the podcast. Just great interview. I know you're a private guy. You can invite them to connect with you in any way possible, or you can say, hey guys, it was a good run. Good luck.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm right now going to be in the search. If you're in the Midwest and you feel like you're a badass, you can definitely reach out to me because I am looking for a GM, and that's my goal 2023. I want to find somebody that can, you know, probably come up and meet my level and kind of run things for me a little bit so that I can continue to grow. I also do real estate stuff and some other couple other businesses that I want to focus on. So you can reach me at Johnny_G_Van on Instagram, or you can send me an email, john@flt-wi.com.
Vincent, I know you're hearing that. Make sure we have that in the show notes. If for some reason you don't get in touch with him and you want to reach out to sean@seancastrina.com, and I will make sure that he gets it. And you do know how to spell my name. So just send that to me and I'll make sure you get in touch. Johnny, I want to thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
Yeah. Thanks, Sean. That was awesome. Absolutely.
Oh, I knew it would go good. I never rehearse. I meet my guest when we turn the podcast on. That's when we start the thing. All right. Thank you so much for listening. You know, we're going to talk again soon, probably in the next few days. This podcast is brought to you by GetStartedMarketing.com. You need more leads. You need more sales. You don't understand marketing. Just reach out to Get Started Marketing and they'll give you a free analysis. I'm excited to talk again soon.